Good evening. I'm John Chancellor, NBC News in Rome. Frank McGee is in New York and will be along in a minute. Here's the news. President Gamal Abdel Nasser of Egypt is dead. He died this evening, Cairo time, of what is described officially in Egypt as a massive and severe heart attack. There has been no hint in the Cairo radio broadcasts of any foul play. Nasser was 52 years old at the time of his death and had been reported in poor health in recent years, although there had been no hint of a cardiac condition. He was stricken this afternoon at Cairo Airport, where he was seeing off a visiting dignitary. He complained of dizziness and was taken to his suburban home, where doctors failed to save him. Under the Egyptian constitution, Nasser will be replaced temporarily by the vice president of the republic, Anwar el Sadat. And the death of Nasser, who had ruled Egypt for 18 years, will have a profound effect on the politics of the Middle East and could produce changes in the European journey of President Nixon, who is in the Mediterranean tonight. Yesterday, when these pictures were taken in Cairo, President Nasser seemed healthy enough as various Arab leaders assembled to sign another Middle Eastern peace treaty. Among them, Yasser Arafat, the guerrilla leader who caused Nasser some difficulties because of his militancy. At the time of his death, Nasser is the only political name that counts for anything in Egypt, which is the hinge of the Middle East and the most important Russian outpost in that part of the world. Nasser's death leaves a void in Egyptian and Middle Eastern politics which may be so wide and so deep that Egypt and that area could be in serious danger of political upheaval. And this period of political realignment can mean bad problem for the Russians, who have perhaps 10,000 technicians in Egypt now and depend in part on Egyptian ports for Russian ships. But for the Middle East as a whole, the death of Nasser means that a pivotal and influential man, a man who could bring guerrilla leader Arafat and King Hussein together, that a pivotal and influential man is suddenly gone. The Vatican said tonight that the Pope was profoundly moved by the news of the death. Nasser's funeral, Thursday, is likely to be a landmark event involving the leaders of what is known as the Third World, as well as many communist bloc and Western statesmen. It will certainly affect the plans of Nasser's friend, Marshal Tito of Yugoslavia, and Tito's plans could affect those of President Nixon, who is due in Yugoslavia day after tomorrow. NBC News correspondent Herbert Kaplow is in Italy tonight with the presidential party.
President Nixon issued a statement tonight from the aircraft carrier Saratoga in the Mediterranean, where he is spending the night. He called Nasser an outstanding leader who tirelessly and devotedly served the cause of his country and the Arab world. And Mr. Nixon went on to say, "This tragic loss requires that all nations, and particularly those in the Middle East, renew their efforts to calm passions, reach for mutual understanding, and build a lasting peace." Nasser long had been regarded by American officials as the single most important Arab leader. He also was considered unpredictable and unreliable insofar as relations with the United States. So it was considered a major achievement when Nasser was persuaded to go along with the American-initiated peace effort. The obvious question the president and his aides are asking tonight is whether there is a successor with enough standing to do the job. As of now, Nixon aides do not think Nasser's death will affect the president's current trip, but they are by no means certain, and they are even less certain about the bigger issue, peace in the Middle East. Herbert Kaplow, NBC News.
Israel is as much affected by Nasser's death as any Arab state. To the Israelis tonight, the old adage, better the devil you know than the devil you don't know, has never seemed more true. The Israelis now wonder what kind of political leadership will emerge in Egypt and what relationship that new leadership will have with the Russians who supply the planes and the missiles aimed at the Israelis. So it has turned out to be a busy night in Tel Aviv. And
the death of Egypt's President Gamal Abdel Nasser was not greeted here in Israel with wild jubilation, but rather with a sense that a commanding figure, both heroic and weak, has passed from the scene. Nasser was an enemy, but the Israelis knew what to expect from him. What comes now is uncertainty. Nasser dominated Egypt, and there is some fear in Israel that eager young military types may take over and replace his combination of daring and caution with sheer adventurism. Nasser dominated the Arab world. There is no obvious replacement. And in Israel, no one was willing to predict whether Nasser's passing would permit such moderates as Jordan's King Hussein to make their own way toward accommodation with Israel, or whether Nasser's departure would give the Arab radicals a free hand. An Israeli cabinet minister said it would not be long before Israel knew whether there was justification for hopes of a new era leading to peace. Alvin Rosenfeld, NBC News, Tel Aviv.
The sudden death of President Nasser tonight shocked this city of 6 million people. Nasser died 3 hours after suffering a heart attack, but his death was not announced until 4 hours later. However, the people were prepared for some major tragedy because news programs were cut off on television and radio, and all that was heard for some hours was the chanting of verses from the Holy Quran. Nasser had just passed through a hard week of leadership in the Arab Summit Conference, which last night produced an agreement to end the civil war in Jordan. It is difficult to predict what the absence of Nasser will mean to the implementation of this agreement, but it is likely that Anwar el-Sadat, the vice president, will carry on Nasser's policies. Edward Scott, NBC News in Cairo.
This is NBC Nightly News, Monday, September 28, 1970. Brought to you by Crest, the toothpaste that really works against cavities, because fighting cavities is the whole idea behind Crest.
And tomorrow there'll be a quiz. Yes,
Boys, what is it?
Oh, we have one cabin.
Great, we did it.
How'd you do it?
We switched to Crest.
In my opinion, fighting cavities is the most important thing. So we switched to Crest. The others we tried didn't have fluoride. Crest really works against cavities.
That's what a toothpaste should do.
That's what it's all about.
Fighting cavities is the whole idea behind Crest.
Watch the new Homelite Easy, the only super lightweight chainsaw with the guts to take a tree 3 feet in diameter, just in case you should ever want to. It's ideal for limbing, pruning, and bucking, too. The new Easy is the lightest chainsaw Homelite ever built. Just 8.5 pounds, plus cutting attachments. And you wouldn't believe how easy it is to start. Two fingers, lift, and away you go. You can cut up enough firewood in an afternoon to last you through the whole winter. The Homelite Easy is the chainsaw with professional performance, designed for the weekend woodsman. Visit your Homelite dealer soon and see how easy it is to be a weekend woodsman with a Homelite Easy. By the makers of the world's fastest-selling chainsaws. Find us in the Yellow Pages.
Nasser's death will probably throw the Middle East peace talks into even deeper confusion. Hope for the talks and the peace they might eventually bring had already been almost blacked out by charges of ceasefire violations and then the war that erupted in Jordan. Nasser was the principal Arab leader behind the peace initiative, brought Jordan's King Hussein into the move, and was the only Arab chief given any possibility of controlling Palestinian guerrillas and making a future peace work. Now, Nasser is dead, and Hussein's country is, for all purposes, being run by a commission of other Arab leaders. And more hostile Arab states didn't like the peace talks in the first place. Before Nasser's death was disclosed today, Israel's foreign minister charged at the United Nations that Egypt is still moving missiles into forbidden Suez Canal zones in violation of the ceasefire.
It is still our desire and policy to explore the terms of a final peace by discussions under Ambassador Yaring's auspices, in accordance with our statement of August the 4th. In a dialogue on peace, we shall have much to say and to propose for the common benefit of our region. I must add in frankness that even when the violations are corrected, the memory of them will not swiftly vanish from our minds and hearts. A new burden has been laid on the eventual negotiating process, which at best will be complex, arduous, and long. When we reflect on our experience with the hopes and expectations of 1957 and with this latest incident, we become fortified in our resolve to insist that all peace engagements be direct, explicit, signed and sealed in the most precise contractual form. Israel is ready to resume discussions under Ambassador Yaring's auspices as soon as the violations are rectified and the situation prevailing on the day of the ceasefire restored.
Word of President Nasser's death struck the UN with shock and uncertainty comparable with that on two similar occasions, the deaths of Dag Hammarskjöld and President John Kennedy. When the news reached the active committees, they were adjourned, and solemn knots of delegates gathered in the lounges and corridors, some Arabs with tears in their eyes. Many delegates agreed that efforts to make peace in the Middle East have suddenly become even more difficult than ever before, because Nasser had been exerting active leadership of the Arabs. Secretary General Thant called Egypt's loss incalculable because of the historic part Nasser had played in events of the last two decades in the Middle East. Representatives of the 14 Arab states went into immediate session to try to begin facing a whole new situation. There probably will be a special assembly tomorrow for eulogies, but there is no denying the fact, as one informed source put it, the most influential moderate leader of the Arab world is gone. This is Pauline Frederick, NBC News at the United Nations.
Nasser was the most powerful figure in the Arab world for nearly two decades, the leader from whom other Arab chiefs often took their cues. Even some Israelis who had reason enough to dislike him appreciated that only a leader of Nasser's grip on the Arab world and the imagination of its people could dare risk coming to terms with Israel. Gamal Abdel Nasser was a colonel in the Egyptian army when he led the 1952 coup which deposed King Farouk. 8 years later, at the United Nations General Assembly, he'd become a power to be reckoned with in the Middle East, although he never succeeded in his objective of unifying all Arab countries. The growth of Russian influence in the Middle East was symbolized by this meeting at the Aswan High Dam between Nasser and Nikita Khrushchev, then the Russian premier. Originally, it had been intended that the United States would furnish the money for the project, but that never happened, and Russia built the dam. By the time Nasser was sworn in for a second term, he was preeminent in Arab countries. If he could neither unify nor speak for them, at least his voice was the loudest. It was loud enough, for example, to summon the heads of Arab nations to Cairo. This one is Hussein of Jordan. To be told what to do and when and how to do it, Nasser never seemed to be dejected by the fact that all too often the visiting heads of state went home and did exactly what they had planned to do before coming to Cairo. Nasser was indefatigable in his exhortations. Here is some of what he said at a recent Arab summit
meeting. And I wish to add here, brethren, to be quite honest with you, that victory is difficult and that the road to victory is the most arduous and the most dangerous, but it is the path with no alternative.
NBC News will present a special television program on President Nasser tonight at 11:45 Eastern Time.
Get lost, pal. Psst, cigarettes, sweet divines, and no remarks, huh?
Hey, buddy, a box of brown cigarettes. The ones that look like cigars.
In this fancy, frilly, you gotta have a gimmick world, there's one cigarette that doesn't go along.
Let me have a pack of Camel filters.
We're not about to hide our kind of easy taste behind some gimmick. Camel filters, they're not for everybody. But then, they don't try to be.
NBC Nightly News continues. Brought to you by the Savings and Loan Foundation. Reminding you that where you save does make a difference.
Oh, Mr. Benny, Mr. Benny.
Oh, hello, Dennis.
Hello, Mr. Benny. I was passing by and I thought I'd tell
Listen,
you...
Listen, I deposited that money for you in a savings and loan, Dennis.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Benny. I was passing by and I thought I'd better...
See, where you save does make a difference, right?
Right.
Now, what do you want to tell me, Dennis?
Your garage is on fire.
What?
Jack Benny is brought to you by your nearby Savings and Loan Association.
He is?
While the president's basic purpose here in Rome is to talk about NATO strategy, the Middle East took up part of his day even before the news of Nasser's death. The president concerned himself this morning with the dispatch of relief supplies to Jordan, which included 4 cargo planes, 2 field hospitals, and a water purification plant. In addition, it was learned that American soldiers in Germany are still on alert for possible duty in Jordan. But the high point was the president's last-minute, unscheduled visit to a plane load of American skyjack hostages on their way home, and that was quite a scene. The hijacked hostages arrived in Rome this morning by charter jet from Cyprus. They were tired, but otherwise all right. The president interrupted his official schedule to fly out to the Rome airport to greet them. With Mr. Nixon were Italian Premier Emilio Colombo, Secretary of State William Rogers, and Transportation Secretary John Volpe. The president shook hands with all the hostages and told them he was happy to see them safe and sound and free at last.
We're glad to welcome you. We tried to help you without hurting you. It was very difficult.
Then, in an attempt to obtain a little privacy, the president and the hostages went inside the jet, away from the crowds and the noise, to talk together for a few minutes. After saying goodbye, Mr. Nixon took a moment to talk to reporters, to recount his early fears for the hostages' safety and their chances of survival.
The feeling that their captors might do something irrational in the event that we triggered it or somebody else triggered it. This, of course, bore out the wisdom of our policy. And I am glad that we did show the proper restraint during this period, while at the same time being very firm in our diplomacy and firm in the demonstration of our military strength in the event that that became necessary in that part of the world. And I said, too, that as a result of what they had been through, that I felt that the possibility of reducing hijackings in the future had been substantially increased.
After the meeting, the hostages flew on to New York. They left a happy president behind them because their unexpected, unconditional release has freed him from a huge diplomatic and political problem. Douglas Kiker, NBC News, Rome. The president's Roman schedule today was filled with some heavy protocol and a couple of surprises. He spent much of the day in his helicopter being flown from one appointment to another under heavy guard. He met the president of Italy and then flew to meet the prime minister. He made a surprise visit to an airport to talk to hostages, attended a state luncheon, and saw the Pope. One Roman newspaper said the president's day was frenetic, and that word was not far off the mark. The president was running a bit late because of phone calls to Washington when he arrived at the Villa Madama, a palace on the north side of Rome, for talks with Prime Minister Emilio Colombo. Some politicians in Colombo's center-left government are critical of American policies, and Italy's position is that the NATO alliance is all right just as it is, but not all right if it is extended into the Middle East. Mr. Nixon, on his part, is stressing the importance of NATO and the United States in the Eastern Mediterranean, a view shared by Secretary of State Rogers and advisor Henry Kissinger, who were along today. The meeting with Colombo lasted 50 minutes. Later, after a state luncheon, the President and Mrs. Nixon took a fast and uninterrupted ride through the sunny streets of Rome on their way to visit a famous personage. The president this afternoon drove to the Vatican, accompanied by Mrs. Nixon and members of his personal staff. Roman police rounded up 2 busloads of leftist demonstrators and drove them out of the Vatican, but the president saw none of this as he arrived for his second meeting with the Pope in 18 months. It was to take Mr. Nixon longer than he had planned today to talk to the Pope. Their meeting would run beyond the time on the president's schedule.
Mr. President, on the occasion of this journey of youth to Europe, you have wished to pay us a further visit. You have welcomed the opportunity thus afforded us of having a renewed personal contact with you and of expressing to you once again with even greater insistence our deeply felt paternal concern for the cause of peace.
Tonight, after I leave the Vatican, I will be flying to sea, and there I shall see the mightiest military force which exists in the world on any ocean. Today, here in this room, we have had the opportunity to hear expressed a different kind of power, the spiritual power which moves nations and moves men.
Waiting to cheer the president in a nearby room were young American priests who are studying in Rome. And at the end of the president's visit with the Pope, there was a surprise. Mr. Nixon was to have boarded a helicopter in St. Peter's Square for a trip to the Sixth Fleet, but instead, he decided to drive Mrs. Nixon back to her hotel and press a little flesh along the way. And here's how it went.
Deliciously soft, subtly shaped, announcing Free Spirit Bra. Give softness a little support. Cool Trico cups with a secret seam that shapes without showing for today's fluid, natural line. This filmy stretch smooths every move. Free Spirit Bra. From Playtex, give softness a little support.
This woman has what every woman wants. Soft hands and hard nails. No lotion can give you both. Only gloves can help. Playtex gloves. They're fully lined to keep your hands safe from water that's too hot, rough cleansers, detergent that's too strong. Yes, Playtex gloves can help you have soft hands and hard nails. Buy now. Get an extra glove free. Almost like two pair for the price of one.
Following a 100-mile chase today, police in Massachusetts arrested William Gilday, wanted in the killing of a policeman in a bank holdup last week carried out by five people. Gilday, two other men already under arrest, and two co-eds still at large are, according to the Boston police chief, part of a radical campus group. The mood at Kent State University, which reopened today, was hardly radical.
Classes open for the fall quarter not long after sunrise. Kent State people believe they are starting something new with today's opening. They are sadder because of last May's shooting, and they believe they are wiser in the ways of handling the incidents which led to the four student deaths in the spring. Tonight, there will be a candlelight memorial for the victims of the National Guard bullets. There's another kind of memorial to them on the campus, a sort of an unintentional monument. It's a bleak little concrete structure on top of the hill where the National Guard stood and fired in May. People don't go there much now, and when Kent State held a convocation today, it was not on the hilltop, but on the common, where student gatherings are traditionally held. It rained, but thousands of students stood through that to hear President Robert White ask their help in keeping Kent State's destiny away from the outsiders and within the college community.
As you know, all are watching Kent State University, watching each of us. We can show the nation how to do the job. It is heartwarming indeed to know that you are on the campus again. Welcome home.
The government index of leading economic indicators fell 0.3% last month. It was the first time the index had dropped in 3 months, but a Commerce Department spokesman said it doesn't change the pattern of recovery in the economy. Prices fell slightly today on the New York Stock Exchange as trading continued active. The Dow Jones Industrials lost almost 3 points, and the price of an average share went down 4 cents. On the American Exchange, an average share gained 10 cents. News of President Nasser's death came after the stock exchanges had closed. At least three people have died so far in California forest fires this year.
Scenes like this were repeated dozens, if not hundreds of times in Southern California over the weekend. This house was saved, but at least 700 buildings have been destroyed. Acres are involved from the Mexican border north of Los Angeles. There have been at least 20 major fires. Residents of an old folks' home were among the thousands evacuated ahead of the flames. Many men took their family and possessions to safety, then went back to do what they could to protect their homes. Temperatures were up to 105 degrees. Winds hit 70 miles an hour. Some fires started accidentally. Firemen say that others were intentionally set. These three young men are among five people who have been arrested on suspicion of arson. They had 40 books of matches in their possession. Police are still looking for other suspects. There is really no good estimate of the number of homeless. There is no shortage of donated clothing or food for the people burned out. One apartment building owner offered a month rent-free to fire victims. The fire situation improved somewhat today, principally because the wind died down. But homes were still being threatened by stubborn canyon fires in the Malibu area of Los Angeles and by a 30-mile brush fire near San Diego. Don Oliver, NBC News, Los Angeles.
Intrepid, the United States entry, won America's Cup today off Newport. Australia's Gretel II won only one of the five races contested. And so the America's Cup stays in the United States. The Department of Health, Education, and Welfare ruled today for the first time that a northern school district segregates black and white students in elementary schools, and it recommended that the district in Ferndale, Michigan, no longer receive $275,000 yearly in federal money. John Dos Passos, the novelist, died today of a heart attack in Baltimore, where he'd lived in recent years. He was 74. In his long career as a writer, Dos Passos created a new literary form, several of them, particularly in the trilogy called USA. Politically, he moved from the extreme left in the early 30s to the far right in the years following the Second World War. And commuters who ride or try to ride trains coming or trying to come into New York City have become increasingly frustrated with breakdowns, delays, fires, and even floodings. So some of them have designed an inflatable plastic doll that looks like a conductor. And they play a game with it called Punch a Conductor. The trouble is, the doll has a smile on its face, and after it's punched, it bounces right back, still smiling, which could cause the commuters to become even more frustrated. Thank you, and good night for NBC News.